Okay, Shavua Tov, Kedvach. Tonight is February 29th, something I probably won't say for another 4 years.
Leap year.
And it's the 15th lecture of this year with the life, the times of Shabbosai Tzvi. And we are doing a second lecture on the Hasidic Revolution and how the Baal Shem was able to turn it around. We mentioned about the Baal Shem Tov, great personality, what he was, and he's for a large part of his life he led a simple life, a very under the radar. We do know he was very orphaned when he was very young. We know at some point he helped the malamed, and he would bring children to the cheder, and somehow he met up with very, very special and holy people who taught him what he knew. We also mentioned that he had a magid himself, and he was taught from the neshama of Achia Hashiloni. Achia Hashiloni he lived a very long time. Achia Hashiloni, I believe he was a disciple of Moshe Rabbeinu, but he didn't make his way into the Mesorah till much later. He was also the one who anointed Yeravam ben Nevat, which at the beginning would have been good on the resume, but after Yeravam ben Nevat went off, that wasn't. But Yeravam ben Nevat was on the level of David HaMelech. And he was also the Rebbe of Eliyahu HaNavi. So it was his neshama that went and would teach the Besht about what was the workings up in Shemayim and the I guess what we would call Kabbalah or inner secrets of the Torah. Last week we were discussing what made the Besht's approach different than any others. We mentioned some of the issues that they were having, right? We mentioned the issues of the first and foremost was the attendance. If a magidim were coming, a magid here is a sense not a spiritual being, but the magid was the preachers who would come around and tell stories and try to influence the people. So we mentioned that the magidim were coming before the Besht. So what was special, why they were not, largely they were unsuccessful, whereas the Besht was tremendously successful. So one of the issues they pointed out was the attendance. When the Magid would come to town, not too many people would come to listen to the Magid. Secondly is the Magidim were held in very low esteem. The Magidim were held in very, very low esteem. And therefore, who is this person? Why is he telling me what to do? How do I know he's not any better than me in his home? And in general, Torah was not looked up like it should have been. So when the Magidim would come in, they always say, is like either why is learning Torah so special? Or even if he is a big Talmud Chacham, and many did hold of Talmidei Chachamim, how do I know he is a Talmud Chacham? We also mentioned that the Torah scholars in those days, they were talking down to one another. Especially, I think he's, without saying, Yaakov Yosef told us, Yaakov Yosef in his Sefer, he was pointing out, we mentioned last time, he didn't say it by name, but he was referring to the Misnagdim and the Chassidus, and the Chassidim, the negative things that were being said back and forth from one another. And the people, they would hear this, and this was really a problem before Chassidus, but People would say, look, what do you want from me not giving respect to a Talmud Chacham? Other Talmidei Chachamim are not giving respect to these Talmidei Chachamim. I mean, this issue was an issue before the Hasidim came on the scene, and also after as well. Also, they felt that the Talmidei Chachamim, the haughtiness of the Talmidei Chachamim, and this was very controversial of in outside of the Hasidic circles, and that he held that people would get up and they'd say Torah, and they'd say their pilpulim, and they felt it was just, the purpose was to show their own chachma, their own smart, their own genius. And it really did not speak to the people, and people viewed him, ah, he's just a balgaiva, look at that, so he could do these great things. So what? What does that have to do with me? So he felt that when Talmidei Chachamim did that, and they had that type of learning, and Pilpul was still being learnt then, the type of learning. We generally do not have that type of learning today. When, in Mitzvah Hashem, I'm hoping next season, when we get to, we'll hopefully get to the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, we'll see how the influence of the Gra, or the Vilna Gaon, was such that one of the things that had changed was the way, the style of learning. The Vilna Gaon was very much into emes, truth. And that had a big impact on learning. And today, you know, today's learning all came from his student, Rav Chaim Volozhin, who opened the Volozhin Yeshiva. All yeshivas stem from that yeshiva. Everyone can trace a Rosh Yeshiva, a Mashgiach, that came from the Volozhin Yeshiva. So it was called the Ema Yeshivas, and Rav Chaim Volozhin was the premier, the foremost Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. So today we don't have this pilpulim, but this pilpul was, he felt, was a type of a haughtiness. Many people would say it wasn't. It was like, you know, it was learning, and if you're not gonna have that rigorous learning, you're gonna lose out. It's gonna, Torah is gonna be lost. We also we mentioned, so those were the issues. We said what was different about the approach of the Besht, and we spoke about, one is that there has to be a connection with a tzaddik. As we spoke about all this last week, that the tzaddik is, if you don't have a tzaddik, you're lost. And in this way, there were a few ways to get a connection with a tzaddik. One that... that all Jews are spiritually tied to one another. It's not just that we're all from Har Sinai and there's Achdus, but somehow there's a spiritual connection. So there was a spiritual connection with all of us, but with a tzaddik, there's also a spiritual connection, and that's going to affect everybody as well. This is very controversial, which the non-Hasidim did not hold of, which is that tzaddikim have a higher soul. Some people have a higher, greater soul than others. And if that's the case, you know, I guess the tzaddik is somehow better than the rest of the people.
Why is it controversial? I mean, this, the person who's doing pilpul is a big Talmud Chacham. He could do something better than the other guy, so tzaddikim have higher souls. Everyone is better.
I guess, okay, so why is it controversial? I guess my understanding is that if a person works on himself and makes himself into a better person, that's understandable. So, at least in the non-Hasidic circles, if you see a great Talmud Chacham, he's great in his learning because he worked on himself. He's great on his midos because he worked on himself. It almost seems like here, just people are born with a greater neshama, greater soul.
They
came
for a higher purpose.
They came for a higher purpose. If it was just a, right, in other words, I guess, if he worked on himself to become a greater tzaddik, then maybe. But it seems that almost they held that there were certain people they just given a higher neshama.
Like son of the tzaddik is also a tzaddik?
I'm sorry?
Son of the tzaddik was also a tzaddik?
Again, I don't know how this all works. I'm not sure, but it almost seems that, okay, it was a given that certain people are
right.
Greater. Okay.
So what's the matter with being born with a higher soul? Some people are born smarter. Why do they focus on that? It bothers them.
Okay. I don't know, but this was...
You're right. Some people are born, they come to the trigonometry in the crib.
Okay. I'm not sure. I'm going to end off with, I don't know. But this is a tenet. This is a tenet that there were people that had higher neshamas, and you wanted to connect with them. And also this again also is controversial, is that through the tzaddikim went the tzinor to the whole world. In other words, there was a tzaddik, and through him, bracha went through the tzaddik to the masses, as opposed to Hashem, everybody having a direct connection with Hashem. It went through the tzaddik. This is what they believed, and based on this, so now we're all connected. A tzaddik is a higher neshama, and all bracha that's coming through the world is coming through a tzaddik, so I better get hooked up with a tzaddik, because otherwise I'm going to be missing that bracha. At least that's the my understanding of what Chassidus was, and that's how they were able to convince people to want to go to hear a tzaddik talk, to want to hear, to get close to a tzaddik and be influenced by a tzaddik. Okay, at least that was the different from the Hasidic approach, as opposed to the Magidim. The Magidim were just telling them how important it is to get close to Hashem, and it wasn't resonating. It was, but it wasn't having that impact as this. What here now is you're telling the masses, this is, you better do this. If not, you're missing out so much. So you almost like, it seems like almost you put the drive, my understanding is you put the onus on the people to find a tzaddik, as opposed to, you know, the tzaddik trying, or the Talmud Chacham, or the leader trying to convince the people, going to the people. Okay, that seems, and it seemed to have worked. It was a major, major change, and it had a term. It was the start of a movement. Okay. Also, the tzaddik is brings up or is brought down by the people. This is what we also mentioned last time. The tzaddik is up here and the people are down here. So what's going to happen is either the tzaddik is going to, they're all connected, everybody's connected. So if the tzaddik doesn't bring the people up to where he is, eventually, he is going to be brought down to where the people are. So it's, again, in the tzaddik's best interest to bring the people up. And I guess it's also in the people's best interest to be brought up and not to stay where they are. Otherwise, they're going to be bringing their tzaddik down, and they're going to get less bracha through that tzaddik. And this is all, we're all connected. And therefore, it's under everybody's best interest to make themselves better.
Okay.
Which was the Moshe Rabbeinu example? When he lifted his hands. So he lifted his hands, and that helped the people win over the war. The way I understood when Moshe Rabbeinu lifted his hands, the way I learned it is they looked up and they were looking. It helped them, the people, look towards Shemayim, and all the people were brought up in their own thoughts and their thinking about Hashem, and that's what gave the Jews the strength, or the ruchniyah strength, to win over Amalek.
He was also weakened,
but
had the doubts, and they were
right. Okay, so they're brought down, and somehow when the people, again, it depends, what is it all ruchniyah tied? I could see the Hasidim, it's ruchniyah tied. Is it ruchniyah tied that, like we're saying over here, in a ruchniyah sense, that they're bringing him down and up? Okay, and it could, wait, again, I was taught it wasn't necessarily ruchniyah tied, it was tied through the thoughts at the time, mm-hmm. when everybody's doing the right thing, not necessarily in a tzinor type of way, but
also
in a ruchniyah way. But okay, this was the way, and this is the way exactly the Hasidim would have interpreted Moshe's hands going up and down. Okay. And now this is where we were up to last week, is how does the tzaddik make himself a tzaddik, or remain for himself a tzaddik? So one thing was very, very big, is that they had to constantly be thinking of Hashem. And the sources they're bringing were not just Hasidic sources. They were bringing even Rishonim. The first is the Ramban. The Ramban says in Dvarim, he says it's quite likely, including the mitzvah of clinging to Hashem, the mitzvah is ubo sidvak, and with him you should cling to Hashem. It's one of The Ramban holds it's one of the 613 mitzvahs. I think everybody holds it. It is one, but I'm not sure. And he says, what is that? You should constantly remember Hashem and His love. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. Again, this is the Ramban. This is 500 years, 12, 19, about 600 years before Hasidism. So whatever you're doing, wherever you go, as you walk on the road, when you lie down, when you wake up, you should never stop thinking about Him. It should be such an extent that even as you're outwardly talking to people, your mind is really not focused on them but on Hashem. Even while they are still alive, they're bound up in the bond of life. They themselves have become the dwelling place of the divine Shekhinah, as alluded to in the Rav Yehuda HaLevi. I guess in this week's parsha, right? Yasuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. It says it in the plural, and I will live among them. I think the real plan A was that Hashem should be living in every one of us. In other words, Hashem did not. Plan A was not to have a Mishkan. It was only after the Chet of the Egel, where Hashem saw that Klal Yisrael wanted or needed a physical place where Hashem could be. So Hashem said, and that was the reason for the Egel. They wanted Hashem to be on the Egel, and Hashem said that's not the way to do it. If you want to do it, we'll do it the right way. And Hashem made a Mishkan where He would dwell. But v'shachanti b'socham really means that Hashem wants to dwell on every individual in that way. And how do you accomplish that? By constantly thinking about Hashem. Okay. Also, this is the Baal Shem Tov himself. So the Tzavos HaRivash, which was written sometime later, the Besh wrote, or he said that he should think and believe with perfect faith that the Shekhinah is with him and his guardian and his view. And that he is viewing the Creator, and the Creator, Hashem, is viewing him. And he may also be the source of all good. And he should say to himself, I don't trust or fear anything except Hashem. Again, that's what the same idea, that's what a person should be thinking. Also, another one, he should constantly seclude himself and meditate with the Shekhinah. This is what, the Rivash, the Besh himself, saying, not think of anything save his unceasing love for the Shekhinah. And that he should cling unto him, he should constantly say in his mind, when will I merit the light of the Shekhinah will dwell in me? Again, the Baal Shem. This is the idea of what a tzaddik, this is what's going to make a tzaddik. This is again back in the Ramban. Those who forsake all matters of this world and pay no attention as if they were no longer physical beings. Again, this is the Ramban in Vayikra, Perek Yud Ches. All their thoughts and intentions are only for Hashem, similar to Eliyahu. And because their souls cling to Hashem, they will live forever with their bodies and souls, as it says about Eliyahu. And through Midrashim, it says about Chanoch. Okay, that's the Ramban. And this is told us Yaakov Yosef. Again, he says the same idea. He says, but here he says that... first, he says, like the Ramban, in the future, all the tzaddikim will surround Hashem and they'll all point to Him, and they'll say, this is Hashem for whom we longed, and they will reach the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, look at the Rambam in the Perek Shmona of Hilchas Tshuva. He says, it means that everyone should make boundaries for the people. It says, I'm not sure if this is the Rambam that he's talking, maybe it is. It says that each one should make a boundary for himself according to the grasp of his mind and his ability. There's whatever he could to think of what Hashem is, and that's where he should be. And he says, when the verse says, watch yourself from going up the mountain, it's saying, don't try to reach a level too high. And that's where Ben Zoma, Arba Nichnas Lepardes, and Ben Zoma gazed, and he was badly affected. No two people are on the same level. He says it also... very similar by, it says, many tried to be like Reb Shimon bar Yochai, were not successful. That means that they tried to act like Reb Shimon bar Yochai, they tried to be on his level, but it just wasn't there. They wanted to imitate what others did, and that's not where he was ready for. And with that, then, if so, one doesn't get anything. He loses his own level. Okay, and that's, again, all these ideas are constantly be thinking about Hashem as much as you could, And that's the idea, that's one thing. The second thing he said for a tzaddik is to think that the learning connects to Hashem. I think this was also a little bit contradiction. Not controversial. And that means like this. He said, this is again, told us Yaakov Yosef, he says, I heard in the name of the Baal Shem, that when it says Lishma, that one should have in mind for the sake of the words and the letters itself, to cling to its root. That means when you're learning, each letter of Torah has some sort of kedusha, and each word and letter of the Torah connects you to Hashem. I think he says it a little better here.
All of these instructions, are they for the tzaddik or for any person?
It seems that for everybody, but for sure the tzaddik would reach a higher level. These tzaddikim were reaching levels that they were more, they had Hashem with them constantly. He says also this idea, there are 22 letters through which the world and all its contents were created. Again, with our parasha, B'Tzalel knew how to combine the letters through which heaven and earth were created. The letters, however, are clothes and material substances in this world with many coverings, clothings, and shells. But within the letters is the spirit of Hashem. Okay, just I think the idea is that it's controversial because these letters, the world, the physical world, Torah is the blueprint of the world, right? Hashem looked into the Torah and he made a world. He made a world from the ruchnias, from the letters of the world. It is so, everybody knows that, yeah, through the letters, the world is created. But the Besht seems to be saying to think of those letters and that somehow will add. But it could be almost, at least my way I understand it, and again, I'm not, you know, I'm sure it could be more than this, but that if you, let's say, turn on a computer, right? Now, when you turn on the computer, you have tens of thousands of connections that are being made. Whether I think of those connections, the computer's going to turn on anyway. Right, so knows. I think that was what was controversial about this. Learn the Torah. Learn what it says. You don't have to necessarily think of the connections. The connections are going to happen anyway. The connections are there. But they're going to happen without a person thinking about them. But this was something that, again, it was unique. And this is what the Besht said, that when you're learning, I guess in addition to think about the letters connecting to Hashem. Okay. Also the tzaddik has to also lower himself to the people and raising himself again. But when he does this, he's got to make sure that he's going to be able to get back up. So I think the Sefer told us, Yaakov Yosef quotes the Tzafas Paneya. He says the purpose of creating a person, Ruchnius and Gashmius, is for the person to raise himself as much as he could to Ruchnius. He says into he also brings here, Chanoch and Eliyahu refined their physicality to such an extent that they became like angels. Okay, and this phenomena, behold, there's an aspect of this, that after he rises high above, he then descends in order to elevate lower levels. And this is the secret. In Shir HaShirim, it speaks about where, I think it's in the fifth parak, where Hashem is knocking on the door, and she's lying down on the bed, Klal Yisrael, and saying, "I washed my feet already, you know, I'm ready for bed. How can I get out, go to the door, and I washed my feet?" So he says, this is what it's referring to, the tzaddik, that his feet is washed. Sometimes got to get his feet dirty. He's got to go down and lift the masses. But there is this idea that in Hasidus in general, that nobody really, but people don't stay at the same level. Tzaddikim as well. They're always high, and then they have to lower themselves to reach the people. I guess the idea is to connect, communicate, somehow go down with the people and bring them up. But there's always the idea of going up and down. And I think this is for the masses, to everybody, on different, on whatever level it is. Shabbos And the weekday on Shabbos, we all elevate ourselves and make ourselves greater. And then there's a form of going down. It's called smallness and greatness, Kriya Shema. At the time he's descending, but when he descends, he should take care to see to it that he rises again and not remain down in the lower level. And how does he do that? Again, the Sefer Pnei also says the soul is a burning desire to go high and to go up through learning Torah. Everything wants to go back to its source, and the Neshama too. But he says he would, but again, he still has to make sure that they come down. And he says, again, continuing on this, the wise man will connect himself and cling to Hashem before he descends. And if he first connects himself and clings to Hashem with longing and desire, he will not separate himself from this attachment. Even though he's descending, he will merit to rise and return back. I think they give a mashal of a person, you know, before you go down to a well or you go down in a cave, you tie a rope around yourself. You know, so you'll be able to get back up. And that's something that the tzaddik had to do. It was necessary for the tzaddik to bring himself down and to talk to the people and then go back up. Okay, what was special about the approach of the Besht in that? So the first thing is we mentioned the connecting with the tzaddik. The second thing was through prayer, which is also a big chiddush of the time. And that is not only through learning and Musar, could you come attached to Hashem? And again, Seder told us, Yaakov Yosef, he says he heard from my master, he heard from the Besht, also the way to elevate yourself through prayer. And Hasidism, they put a lot of stress on tefillah, on davening, and I'm not sure where I heard this, but the saying is, Torah is a gift from Hashem to the Jewish people, and prayer is a gift from the Jewish people to Hashem. That's, you know, that is what we're using within ourselves in giving back to Hashem and coming close to Hashem. Okay, I have elevated people. There are a few. Okay, and that's the second thing that he would say before one prays for general redemption. This is the again Seder told us Yaakov Yosef. He hears from the Besht. One should pray for the redemption of his own soul from the Yetzirah. And okay, so again, a person is constantly praying for himself to reach certain levels, as for Klal Yisrael as well. And the third, which also again at the time I guess was controversial, in that it put a stress on joy. Not that there's anything wrong with being joyful. It says that Vilna Gaon was extremely happy. He was a very, very joyful person. But the non-Hasidim felt that the Hasidim put an overstress on the joy. And we'll see in a few things. Okay, one thing is prayer. In prayer, they show joy by clapping. One of the things they did is they, in davening, so it became very, very, davening took on a radical change. I don't mean radical, but it was a change from the way they always davened. They always davened, up until the Hasidim came along, very, you know, in one position, straight, silent, and without movement. And the Hasidim came along and they made it the Lebedik. They made a dance and they were clapping. And actually it says what the clapping was part of it. They said, they're saying that the Hakol Kol Yaakov, V'hayadayim Idei Esav, right? The hand, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the hands are Esav. So the Hasidim would say, we are stealing the Yadayim from Esav. And how you do that? Kol Kol Yaakov HaYadayim. And that's it. We get the hands and we use the hands through the sound of joy through davening. Okay. Just the tzaddik, how does he prevent becoming too haughty? And here he is, he's a tzaddik. He has a higher neshama. And he's there to bring everybody up. So how does he prevent himself from becoming too haughty? Look at how great I am, and I guess that would be defeating. So the Besht says, I think this is in the Tzavos Rivash, he says because of his, he should, intense concentration, he's about to pray, he's prepared to die while praying. Because when a tzaddik starts his tefillah, he should say, think about that I am prepared to die for my while he's davening, and that would, like, I guess, put a little bit of a, instead of thinking how great he is, he'll think that, you know, what am I? And if Hashem is letting me live, he's letting me live, you know, for because of his chesed, right? He should have died only after saying two or three words. When a person thinks these terms, he should say, what personal benefit, like respect from others, can I hope to derive? In his mind, he's ready to die after only two or three words. And the truth, it's only Hashem's kindness that lets a person remain alive. That's his advice that he gave. Back to joy. The soul said to the Rav, and this is the Baal Shem Tov him said, that the reason he merited, this is what the Baal Shem Tov said about himself, the reason he merited these lofty, and that these lofty ideas were revealed to him, not because he had learned so much Torah, Talmud and Poskim, rather because of his prayer, which he constantly did with great concentration. So at least the Baal Shem Tov held about himself was that he reached the levels that he did because of his davening, and I guess with concentration, I guess with also with joy. He said about crying is a very bad thing. He was very, very against crying. The only exception is the crying out of joy. Then it's very beneficial. Again, when we speak about Hasidim, so before the Besht came and coined and took the word Hasidim, so earlier Hasidim was a very ascetic type of a behavior, staying away from this world and fasting and punishing oneself for the sins that they did, and it was a very harsh and serious type of a behavior of a mindset, and he changed all that. That's not what he was. He was very into serving Hashem with joy. Another thing is, once this is what, again, from the Tzavas HaRivash also, you could see how people would not necessarily feel comfortable with this, but this is what he said. One should not act with excessive exactness in all that he does, for this is actual the plan of the Yetzirah, in order to fill a person with anxiety. Oh, did I do it right? Did I do this? Did I do everything right? And a person starts to worry, and then he feels sad, and he's depressed. Maybe I didn't do all my mitzvahs correctly. But he says even if he stumbles in sin, he should not become excessively distraught. It would cause him to cease from his divine service. He should rather be saddened by the sin and go back to rejoice with the Creator, since he has complete regret and he's made a firm commitment never to repeat the foolish act again. I think overall we could agree with this. This itself is not controversial, in that the ultimate this is Ivdu Es Hashem B'Simcha, that everybody could agree on. I guess it almost sounds like to the degree of how does one view that if he made a sin and tshuva that needs to be done. But that could be all different levels. But this was, you could see, the Besht took the other extreme. Joy, joy, and joy. If a person did an Avera, be a little sad, think of the correction, and then go back to being joy. Okay. Even when he knows he hasn't fulfilled a certain thing due to as many things that are preventing him, he shouldn't become saddened. He should realize that Hashem examines his hearts and knows what he really wants to do his best, but is beyond his ability. Okay. The Baal Shem Tov and the spirit world. Okay, this is a very interesting letter that he sent to his brother-in-law, Gershon Kitov. Okay, it was published by, it's in Rabbi Yov Yosef, it's an addendum in his work, Ben Paris Yosef. So this is the letter. So I'm just moving now. This is a letter of what the Baal Shem said about himself. He said, in Rosh Hashanah 1746, again, he passed away in 1760. So this is about 14 years before he passed away. Through the use of Kabbalistic oaths, my soul went up to heaven, in a manner of which was you are well aware. I saw there awesome things, things that I had never beheld from the time that I became spiritually adept. It is impossible to relate to you even face to face what I saw and learned while I was up there. I saw in a vision that Samael, which is I guess the Satan, went up to accuse the Jews with unprecedented exultation. And he enacted his enactments, a decree of destruction on many souls that they die violent deaths. I was seized with trembling, and I risked my life and asked my master, Achia Shiloni, that he should go with me. for there is a great danger to go and ascend to the higher worlds. For from the time that I became spiritually adept, I never risen to such lofty heights. I rose one level after another until I entered the palace of Mashiach. There Mashiach studies together Torah together with all of the Tanayim and Tzaddikim, and also with the seven shepherds. David in the middle, Adam, Shais, Mesushela on his right, Avram, Yaakov, and Moshe on his left. I saw their tremendous joy, but I couldn't understand the reason. I thought that perhaps the joy was due to the fact that I had already departed from this world. However, they informed me afterwards that I had not departed as yet. For they have pleasure above through Yichudim, which is uniting of the spiritual forces, which I practice below using their holy teachings of Torah. He says, however, I don't understand to this day, however, the basis of their joy. Okay. I asked Mashiach, when is the Master coming? We quoted this before, this letter. He replied, you should know this. At the time when your teachings become well known and revealed in the world and your wellsprings overflow, that which I taught you and you grasp, and they too will be able to perform Yichudim, and their souls will arise similar to yours. Then all of the klipos will disappear, and it will be a time of grace and salvation. I was wondering about this and had tremendous anguish about the great extent of time that it would take, if ever. However, amongst the things that I learned while I was there were three segulos, which are formulas that can supernaturally affect changes, and three holy names, which are easy to learn and to express. I felt relieved, and I thought, so in other words, he basically, to reach where he was up there, once he was up there, they taught him like an easier way to get up there, get high, spiritually higher. So now it's just a matter of telling all these people, these Yehudim and Segulos. But he says, I felt relieved and thought that through these means, many of my men of my station could come to such high levels as I, that their souls will rise too, and they will learn to grasp as I do. He says, I was not given permission, however, throughout my lifetime to reveal this. I especially asked on your behalf to teach you, but I was not granted permission. An oath was imposed upon me. Again, a letter from the Baal Shem Tov to his brother-in-law, Avraham Gershon Kutov, which was published by Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. Okay, this is a letter about the Baal Shem himself. Okay, so I guess we really, this, I guess, is the differences of, my understanding, the main differences or the main things that the Baal Shem did, which was highly successful. The connection, having people find the tzaddik, what the tzaddik should do, what the message to the Jewish people were, the messages, joy, prayer, thinking about Hashem. Well, these are the messages, and it had a tremendous effect. And this was a movement that, at one point, like swept the boards. Everything in the East, Eastern Poland, all of Ukraine, all became Hasidim as a result of this. Another part just to show where the Baal Shem was coming from, but just this is the house of where the Baal Shem was, his synagogue, but it was destroyed by the Nazis. Today it's rebuilt, so you could, in 2008 they rebuilt it, so I don't know if it's the exact site, but this is the rebuilt picture of the Baal Shem Tov Siddur. And now in Chabad Library, this is a well that they say was dug by the Baal Shem himself. All right, it actually still is usable, has water there even today. And this is his kever in the town of Mezhebuzh. Okay, during the communist era. Okay, I'm not sure what this is. Probably all different Hasidim, different lineage. Okay, what I wanted to just do is, there was a book out, Lebensgeschichte, and that means my heart. An autobiography, Lebensgeschichte, an autobiography. It was put up by a person by Solomon Maimon. Solomon Maimon was originally brought up in the Ukraine. And he eventually became not from. He moved to Germany, and the end of his life, I don't know how most of his life, he grew up, he shed all, he left Frumkeit, and he became a secular Jew. He wrote an autobiography about himself, and he like describes his life in the Ukraine. And he describes in the 1700s, early 1700s. You're going to see he met the Maggid of Meserich, which was the student after. So he must have met him as a young man in the 1760s. So mid 1700s. So he writes, this is him writing himself when he grew up. So he was a little bit of a scholar. He knew somehow how to learn, and he had tutoring jobs. And one tutoring job was a farmer. And he describes the poverty. So you get an understanding of what the poverty was, of what the Jews lived in at the time of the Baal Shem, of when this was happening. So he writes, "My first position as family tutor was an hour distance from my home. The family was out of a miserable farmer." Again, whatever he's writing, he's already not from a Jewish farmer. He writes, and he's writing now as a non-frum person looking back. So he's not religious anymore, and that's the way he is you see his feeling about religion. "The family was out of a miserable farmer and still more miserable village, and my salary was 5 thalers in Polish money. The poverty, ignorance, and crudeness which prevailed in this house were indescribable. The farmer himself was a man about 50 years, the whole of whose face was overgrown with hair, ending in a dirty, thick beard as black as pitch. His language was a sort of muttering, intelligible only to the boors with whom he daily associated. Not only was he ignorant of Hebrew, but he could not speak a word of Yiddish. His only language was Russian, the common patois of the peasantry. His wife and children were of the same stamp. Their home was a hovel of smoke, black as coal, within and without, with no chimney, but merely a small aperture in the roof for the smoke. This opening was carefully closed as soon as the fire died down, so that the heat might not escape. In this magnificent dwelling, the peasants sit on the bare ground. You dare not sit higher if you do not wish to be suffocated with the smoke." That's how thick the smoke was there. "Here they guzzle their whiskey and made an uproar while the people of the house sit in a corner." So basically, this farmer was also like a bar. And the peasants would come into his house, and he would offer them drink. They'd pay for the drink. I guess that's how he made somewhat of a living. But no, they all, these boors, these Russians would come in and they'd sit on the floor. They couldn't even sit higher because the smoke was so thick. "Here they guzzle their whiskey, made an uproar while the people of the house sit in the corner. I usually took my place behind the stove with my dirty, half-naked pupils and expounded to them out of an old tattered Bible from Hebrew into Russian Yiddish." Even still, you could still see that this Jewish farmer with nothing, you know, doesn't even speak Hebrew himself, but he wants something for his kids. You know, he's willing to pay a tutor. He doesn't have clothes for the kids to wear, and he's paying somebody to teach him Torah. "All this made such a splendid group as deserved to be sketched only by," I don't know who these people are, "Hogarth. William, English artist who won fame chiefly for his moral and satirical engravings and portraits, who lived between 1697 and 1764, and to be sung only by a butler, Samuel, English satirist who lived between 1612 and 1680. It may easily," he continues, "it may easily imagine how wretched my condition here must have been. Brandy became my sole comfort." I guess Solomon Maimon is talking about himself. "To top it off, a regiment of Russians who were then rioting with every conceivable cruelty on the estates of Prince Radzivill was stationed in the village and its vicinity. The house was constantly full of drunken Russians who committed all sorts of excesses, hewed tables and benches to pieces, hurled glasses and bottles into the faces of their hosts, and so on. My other positions as tutor were more or less similar." So you could understand that. I mean, just like a little bit of a background on what this in is stepping the Baal Shem, and with all this is what's What's gonna change? What's also going to change in the late 1600s, along with the Baal Shem, was also political changes. It seems that the Turks overran for a short period of time. The Turks overran the Ukraine and was under the Turks for a short time until the Polish nobility was able to reconquer it. When they were able to reconquer it, so they were very interested in resettling it. And of course, Jews who could resettle it were given preferences and they were given advantages, especially economic advantages. So things did start to improve from the late 1600s when this happened into the 1700s. The Rav Elimelech of Lizinsk also says the majority of the masses are unable to lift themselves up from the service of Hashem due to the immensity of their non-spiritual state, for they are very, very much sunk into corporality. Okay, this is also Rav Elimelech. Okay. I think this is pretty much where the next thing I really would like to get to is, if I were to continue next week, I probably would continue with the Maggid of Mezrich, the continuation, and just take it from there, because after the Baal Shem died, he started the movement, but it really was the Maggid of Mezrich who was an unbelievable coordinator, unbelievable organizer. And he's the one that's going to just make sure everybody's sent to all places in the area. And I guess you call it missionizing, but going out there and going to the masses and inspiring them and getting them to become part of this movement. And that was all done with the Maggid of Mezrich, as well as taking the building tzaddikim, you know, building people up in their highest level. So Mitzvah Hashem, next week we could like summarize what's being done, maybe talk about the Maggid of Mezrich, and next week I guess is the last week.